On the Block, On Demand.
Without Jerry McInerney, we wouldn't have won 10 games this year. Okay? Not 10.
DeVito, pop pass, end zone, touchdown, and the ball game. DeVito, in relief, wins it for the Orange.
They don't know about the Kumbaya meetings we had this week.
Swing and a miss. It is over. The Boston Red Sox, baseball's best all season long. They have won it all.
The Bills make me wanna shout.
Josh Allen, touchdown Buffalo. A 14-yard quarterback draw.
Somebody in Vegas told them they were going to win by 20.
And a celebration begins.
This is On the Block.
Right, you know, there's validity in that opinion.
Here's X-Men.
Ah, Nathan. ESPN Radio 97.7, 100.1, ESPN Radio Utica Rome, heard on 96.5 FM, heard wherever you are, whatever you're doing, on the ESPN app, seen, heard, chatting with, and so much more at twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. Hello, Twitch friends. Great to have you on board today. And if you are not experiencing Twitch, well, come on, get with it. All the hip cats are on the Twitch. It's on the internet, which is on your computer now. Twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. So you get the visual experience of the program here into the inner sanctum. Hello. You get a live chat throughout the show, so we appreciate those that do call 437-7644. Hit me on Twitter, Brent Dax Media. But with that chat open, you can just opine as much as you want during the program. And then when the radio goes to commercials, what happens is we flip the mics. Well, essentially, they stay on. There's a little button I have to push here to make sure we're only talking to the fine people on Twitch during the commercial breaks. But the mics stay on for our Twitch viewers. So it's an experience. It's not just taking in the show. Hope you are experiencing and enjoying this great Wednesday. Another just spectacular fall day. This is my favorite time of the year in central New York or otherwise. You really got to savor these days. Really savored the walk with Summit today. Breathing that crisp fall air, enjoying those sunny days. I did spot the shovel in the corner of the garage saying, hey, remember me? Yeah. We're going to be seeing a lot of each other soon. So soak in those fall days and take us with you when you do it. A lot to get into on this Monday. Chris Carlson is going to join the program at about 5 o'clock. We're going to talk Syracuse football. We're going to talk Syracuse basketball. Oh, hello, basketball. Speaking of things coming out of the corner saying, hello, I'm here. Today was the day Syracuse basketball started officially practicing in the sense that now they get 20 hours a week of practice. They're getting ready for the season in terms of practice. They've been working out kind of 8 hours a week, and you know they're always working out. 24-hour access to the Mello Center. Players can work out as much as they want, but like official, like let's lock it in. Still don't have a schedule. We know November 25th is when they can start playing games. We don't know how quite that's going to play out, but hey, it's 2020, man. You got to roll with the punches. Good to know that basketball is kind of officially in the air. Josh Norman, feeling how Bills fans are today. That's right.
Gives it to Henry. Henry trying to get to outside. The defender, Josh Norman, to his backside.
What the Bills have to completely forget about from last night and what they have to be concerned about. That could be long-term from last night. We will certainly get into that. I'll tell you what, not a fan of Tuesday night football. Kind of over it, right? We're on to Kansas City, as they say. We'll go on the blind side later in the program and so much more. So it's kind of a good news, bad news thing. The good news, of course, is that basketball is in the air. It's time to start thinking about that and discussing that while everything's not tied up, some I's to dot, some T's to cross, but it appears we're going to play some hoops and we're getting there, and it's nice to have that in the conversation because the old joke is, when is basketball season? I'm wondering how much you're going to care about this in the short term, and I'm wondering how much we're going to care about this in the long term. And I hope this scenario does not come to fruition, although Curiosity killed the cat, right? I'm actually sort of curious how this is going to come to fruition. Look, I cannot in any way, shape, or form come on this radio program, go in any forum that you can name, and justify losing to Liberty. Just can't do it. Liberty's the team you put on the schedule as the gimme game. You were supposed to have four non-conference games, of course. 2020 changes that. You have one remaining non-conference game. As much as I did everything short of begging John Wildhack to say, why are you playing this game? Don't play that school. Don't associate with them. They remained on the schedule. Contracts are contracts. Fine. Whatever. So as the schedule and as this season has played out, Liberty comes in on Saturday, and Vegas is Vegas, as we know, but they're a three-point favorite. Now, this is where this conversation is going to get really interesting in terms of, you know, people don't want to hear this, but you need to. Folks, this football team is decimated. And I kind of knew this, but the way that our friend Nate Mink really put this home, really put this on paper, if you will, really put this in front of us. And it hit me this morning, too. Nate and I taped our video that we do weekly on Syracuse.com. It's called Orange Weekly. Hope you can watch. Comes out every Friday. And he brought up some of these points in the video, and you'll see when you watch it on Friday, my eyes kind of bug out. Folks, Syracuse football right now is less than 60 scholarship players. For those of you not familiar, it's not really hitting. Well, what does that mean, Brent? That's really bad. That's really bad. Okay? An NFL roster is allowed to have 53 active members of it. You can only have 47 players active on a game night. We were discussing it last night going into the Bills-Titans game. Who was going to be on the inactive list was going to be big. Sometimes the inactive list, you kind of know it before it comes out. Sometimes you're looking for it. Usually it comes about an hour or so before kickoff because there's like Tre'Davious White and a couple of players we weren't quite sure were going to be on the inactive list. That's kind of a big deal. So if you're telling me that the available players for Syracuse football is starting to creep down towards an NFL roster, that is dire. Okay, I am not exaggerating to say they are now on the fringe. If something, God forbid, happens COVID-wise or the injuries keep piling up, they might not have a roster suitable of finishing the season. That is no longer hyperbole or an exaggeration. Think about all the concerns we had about COVID. Knock on wood, so far, Syracuse has had that handled. Florida LSU got suspended and postponed because Florida's had an outbreak. So despite some out there saying, hey, congratulations, sports, you've plowed through. Well, not exactly. We said all along COVID was going to be a thing. It's not just going to go away because they decided to play through it and some professional leagues managed it. Not everybody can go in a bubble. They're still trying to dodge this thing, right? Syracuse has not, but God forbid there is even a minor breakout of COVID within that school. And we've seen the numbers rising enough to notice at Syracuse University itself, right? All it takes is, as we've seen recently, a pod, if you will, a group of students goes out of town, goes to a party, comes back, and lo and behold, the numbers start going up. If Syracuse University itself has 100 students or more at any given time, I believe, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I was reading this the other night, they essentially are going to shut down and go all remote. So I don't want to alarm you. I'm not trying to say run for the hills here, but you read Nate's story, and I say to myself, you're going to play Clemson with that team? Now, again, there are those out there that will kind of put on their machismo hat and be like, next man up. It's football. It's a tough sport. Better go out there and play through it. But then there are rational people that recognize you have less than 60 scholarship players at college. You can't next man up. It's literally impossible at some positions to do that. As Nate lays out in this article here, okay, let's just go through this. Running backs, who you start with, six players. Abdul Adams, Jarvion Howard, Juwan Jordan, Markenzie Pierre, Sean Tucker, Cooper Lutz. They have three or four left. Pierre, Lutz, Tucker, who, remember, left the Duke game with an injury. Trevor Peña was converted from receiver to running back, not even playing the position he's there to do. Okay? They started with five tight ends. They have three, and they don't even use those two, as they should, and there you go. There's my use the tight ends more reference for the day. Started with 13 receivers, still have about 10, so that receiver position is one that hasn't really been affected. Here's a devastating number. You start with 13 offensive linemen, they have eight left. ACC rules indicate you cannot have seven or less offensive linemen. They won't let you play. That's not a suitable number. That's not enough depth. So that's why Chris Elmore has moved to that position. They're converting players. They're saying, hey, who wants to play offensive line? They're putting McKinley Williams and Josh Black in certain situations to block. They are decimated at that position. Defensive line numbers are about where you would think. They started with 13. They have 10. Linebackers are okay depth-wise, although they've got a few guys out there playing hurt. Remember, Jeff Kantner-Aku leads this team and is one of the leading tacklers in the country. Statistically, he's playing hurt. And that's the thing. Even some of these players that are listed as who they have and who are available, they've got owies and or are not playing 100% right now. And I get football, nobody's truly 100%, but playing through significant injuries that affect how they play. Not just one of those, son, are you hurt or are you injured? Because if you're hurt, you can play. If you're injured, I got to take you out. There's a lot of hurt football players on this team. Your starting quarterback's gone. Your All-American safety's gone. You're down to your fourth and fifth running backs. Like, folks, this is dire. This is bad. And if you're Dino Babers, if you are fill in the blank of whoever has to get out there publicly and address this, well, of course you're going to say things like, adversity makes us stronger, right? Think of all the cliches. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And all these things that you would say in this situation. We're past that. But here's where it's not going to matter. To be fair, and I actually do agree with it in this sense, you can beat Liberty with that team. You can. Liberty's got some talent. We've discussed it through the week. We'll continue to discuss it as we get closer. Malik Williams is the 16th leading rusher in the country right now as a quarterback. Okay? They've got a great running back who's 12th in the country rushing the football right now. A Pittsburgh kid, by the way, is going to be pretty fired up to come close to home and play in the dome in Josh Mack. He's also the third leading rusher in terms of career rushers in college football right now. Travis Etienne is on that list, who Syracuse plays next week, and get ready for that, given the bad run defense they've got right now and the lack of depth they've got right now. I believe there's a kid at Southern Alabama, and then Josh Mack on that list, veteran player. DJ Stubbs, good wide receiver. We've talked about Liberty. Now, where Syracuse, I think, can attack Liberty, where I think Syracuse can win this game, is on the back end. Liberty's defense just doesn't have the bodies, just doesn't have the athletes. So Syracuse has got to attack using the tight ends, running the football with who they have, slant routes, use your athletes, use who you have. So I think Syracuse will win this game. I do. But if they do lose it, no one's going to remember and no one's going to care that the roster was this depleted. But we have to be fair. We have to point this out. How bad it is. That's really freaking bad, folks, when you're under 60 scholarship players. There would be situations. Vanderbilt right now is in a COVID situation, and that's why they can't play right now, because their roster is about at that number. I'd have to check to be absolutely sure, but that's how bad this is. And if you're Dino Babers, you can't be alarmist. You can't come out there, because it's going to sound like you're making excuses, but you don't have a capable football team. He kind of intimated it in his press conference Saturday. I can't remember if it was Saturday or Monday, when he compared the travel roster that Duke brought to the Dome versus what he had at home. And he was fair to point that out, and coaches are hesitant to do it because it sounds like an excuse, but it's not. It's one thing if you lose to Duke and you are healthy, full, and up to where the number should be. And Dino has certainly brought up the lack of depth and have to get the depth back up, and he's trying not to make it sound like an excuse. But sometimes you need something just put out in front of you on paper, digitally or otherwise. Here's how bad it is, right? You go to the doctor, and the doctor is talking, like, doc, just tell me how bad it is, okay? Just in English, how bad is this? Just lay it on me, right? Just be straight with me. This is bad. This is bad enough to the point where, and I'm not trying to be alarmist here. I'm not making a prediction here. I'm saying, like, they're within range here that they might not have a capable roster to finish the season if the injuries keep getting worse, COVID is looming. Like, they're towing that line. They're towing that line. You're going to play Clemson with that team? Dabo Swinney might not even put his starters in out of mercy. That's where we're at. That's where that football team is. It's not good. You can beat Liberty with it. You should beat Liberty with it. But beyond that, I'm going to be fascinated to see if they finish the season. Like, that's kind of where my head is at. After reading that, absorbing that, and thinking about where they are. Rex Culpepper, God bless the kid. Can he carry this team through seven games? And if not, you got Dylan Markowitz, Jacoby Morgan, freshmen who barely have enough reps to be on a team, let alone play ACC football teams right now. Like, so for all the people out there saying make changes, fire Babers, do this or that, you better factor that into the conversation. That's an excuse. Next man up. Why didn't, and they'll always answer that, well, why didn't you recruit better? Why didn't you get more depth? And it's like, do you realize like how freakish that is to have that many injuries? Opt-outs, remember, were a factor this year. And COVID has not affected this team quite yet, knock on wood, but it's looming. It's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. So beating Liberty is still something you got to do. Hate to say it, boys, but it's not an excuse in this game coming up this week. That's the darned if you do, darned if you don't scenario that they are in. All right, let's break on that note. That's the bad news. The good news is Hoops is practicing, even through all this madness in the college sports world today. So we'll start getting that conversation rolling, what the expectations are. And when last we saw this Syracuse basketball team, they were set to play Louisville when we didn't know what we didn't know about the coronavirus. How about that? Before we break, though, I do want to get a phone call or two in. I see Anthony in Syracuse has been waiting patiently, wants to talk about those Buffalo Bills. Yeah, they got to hand it to him last night on Tuesday Night Football. Anthony, thanks for holding on. You go ahead, bud.
Hey, thanks, Brent. Well, Bills team I saw, yeah, they look like they didn't want to be there. It just looked like a scrimmage type of game for them. And I hate to say it, if they, you know, on the stage, they can't beat Kansas City, well, that's two straight losses and potentially downhill from there. You know, I don't know what the problems are, but they're just not ready for prime time. That's for sure.
Well, I don't think last night was a true prime time game. It was a weird situation to be in. They thought they were playing Kansas City on Thursday night. They didn't even know they were playing that game until like 24 hours beforehand. No Matt Milano, no John Brown, no Tre'Davious White. And again, I sound like I'm making excuses here. But you're missing that many key players in that spot. But listen, Tennessee had practiced once or twice in 16 days. They were clearly a fresher team, had a simpler game plan, took advantage of being at home. The Bills were overthinking it. They didn't look ready. Not going to make excuses for the drops, the penalties. The Bills look like the team that hadn't practiced for two straight weeks. So I'm not making excuses for that. We'll get into it more during hot takes, but you just got to burn the film and move on and really open things up as best you can against Kansas City. But how many of those key missing players will be back for that game is going to be a big factor in it. And on that note, we'll break. Thanks for hanging with us here in our Burdick BMW opening drive. Plenty more to come. You're on the block, ESPN Radio.
This is On the Block with Brent Axe.
Yeah, baby, back at you on the block, ESPN Radio. Great to have you here, presented by AMP Auto Parts.
Put on your best dress, baby, and I'll fix your hair.
Interesting contrast here as we head towards Syracuse and Liberty on Saturday. Don't forget that we'll be here. Saturday morning, another noon kickoff for the Orange. So that means a little pregame for you starting at 10 o'clock with yours truly. The Amtrak Syracuse football pregame show presented by Ferron & Son Funeral Home and Charles Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. We'll take it right up until kickoff. And Saturday's a game you got to win. Even with the dire, and I don't use that word lightly, but it is a dire roster situation, as we discussed earlier in the show. But if you're just joining us, Nate Mink wrote a really enlightening article today just how dire, to use that word again, the roster situation is for Syracuse football. They're under 60 scholarship players. That's really bad. Like, you're talking about an 85 scholarship roster, and you look at, as Chris Carlson and I were just discussing, you got to have seven players to on the offensive line just to play a game. The ACC mandates that, and that was, we're not sure. Seth and I were checking on this before the show. I don't think that was a rule before COVID. I think COVID kind of made that a standard, but Syracuse is toeing that line as it stands right now, and they have not been affected by COVID in that case. They have eight healthy offensive linemen, and Nate went through a position by position. This is what they started with. This is what they have, and your eyes bug out of your head. So you're going into this game having to beat Liberty with your backup quarterback, Rex Culpepper. A shout-out to Danny Emmerman, by the way, from the Daily Orange, wrote a really good profile of Rex Culpepper today. Rex is one of these dudes. Dino told the story in his press conference Monday how Dino went on his recruiting visit to meet with Rex, and Rex had, there was like a dune buggy thing in the driveway, and Dino was like, and I don't want to mess up the story here, but it was basically like, hey, where'd you get that? And Rex's dad said, oh, he built that. And I think most of you know that Rex's parents were on Survivor. His neighbor in Tampa is Tom Brady. Of course, the story he had with cancer and overcoming that. Like, Rex is like the most interesting guy in college football. It's amazing the stuff that he can do, that he builds. And he's just a really interesting guy. So Danny's piece was great because it kind of laid out, like, if there's somebody on the surface in life that can come in and patch together a Syracuse offense that needs to be patched together, then maybe Rex Culpepper could be that guy. Rex does have limits in his game, though. When you look at it from a football standpoint, if he was the guy, he'd be the guy, if that makes any sense. He would have beat out Tommy DeVito at this point. So how do you tailor the offense to Rex? I mean, he showed, in the Pittsburgh game, he can throw deep, but beyond that, it's been iffy. There's some short throws there that weren't on mark. Now, that's coming in for an injured player. A week where you know you're the guy, not thinking I'm going to be the guy, getting ready to be the guy in case something happens. It's a mentality difference. You know you're the guy. You're on the spot. You prepare differently. For the love of Pete, you hope the tight ends get used in this case. One position that has not been affected as much as others on this team is wide receiver. You still have some talent there in short yardage, going deep, whatever the case may be. Duke did a really good job last week of taking away the short passing game. Syracuse had to go deep a lot in that game because that's all they had there. And, of course, they want to go deep. But let's not forget, with DeVito in the game, on the mark, a lot of drops last week. A lot of drops. Courtney Jackson, a lot of drops. Even players you wouldn't expect to have drops had drops, so that cannot carry over. So as depleted as the Syracuse roster is, and that's an eye-opening thing, you can beat Liberty with that roster. Even with the talent Liberty has, even though Liberty's seventh in the country running the football right now, there's a lot about Liberty I don't know in that they haven't exactly had a murderer's row here. They've won six straight going back to last year, but you're talking about Louisiana Monroe last week, where 27 of their 40 points came on special teams, which is just amazing to think about. Two block punts for touchdowns, returned a punt for a touchdown, and that was Trayon Sibley, the same kid that was involved in all three of those plays, and two field goals. Northern Alabama, Florida International, Western Kentucky, Georgia Southern, New Mexico State. That's their six-game winning streak. Yeah, okay. Good for you. But you can't let them have their moment in this game. And some people have asked me this on Twitter, and we've discussed it. How bad would this be if you lose to Liberty? Are we talking like Akron-level loss, they won this game, but we were discussing this on Twitter before the show. That Villanova game in 2014, I said it at the time, and I'll continue to have this opinion. What were you doing scheduling them in the first place? If you're going to schedule an FCS team, don't schedule the best FCS team, or at least an FCS team that has success. Like, Villanova's really good on that level. You're going to go FCS, don't bring in a team that can beat you. And it took a fluke play, special teams out of the game just to beat Villanova. As Seth reminded me, I totally forgot about this. Terrell Hunt got thrown out of that game for throwing a punch. Nuts, right? So you look at some of the bad home losses in recent memory. Look, you lose to Liberty, it's right up there. But you have to be fair and look at how depleted this roster is. Starting quarterback's out, Cisco's out, running back position is depleted, offensive line is on the fringe of not even having enough healthy bodies to play in an ACC game. But again, point counterpoint, you can beat Liberty with this roster. How you're going to compete beyond that, particularly against a little team called Clemson next week, is going to be fairly interesting. Okay, so that's on the football front. They lose. Our attention will fully be on basketball. But that flares up in the air today. Full-on practice has started for basketball. They now can go 20 hours a week to get ready for a season that we know starts November 25th. We don't quite know. Now, Jim Boeheim told Mike Waters today they know the teams they're playing. They just don't know how they're going to structure it. They want to play Georgetown. They're confident they can do that. The non-conference schedule is going to have certainly less teams on it than usual. They start November 25th, right after Thanksgiving, and there's that window from the 25th until the middle of January where no one's on campus. Not a fully functioning campus. Everything's shut down, and that was planned that way. So how many basketball games can you get in? You start shaking off the cobwebs. You start thinking about you've got a backcourt of Joe Girard and Buddy Boeheim that are going to play a ton of minutes. They led the ACC in that category last year. But Kadari Richmond is making enough waves, and there's enough buzz about him at practice where I think he's pushing hard enough where you kind of have to play him. You got to find a spot for him, and naturally there's going to be spots when either Joe or Buddy gets into foul trouble if they're on a cold shooting streak, and you know, you just kind of weave him in. Usually at like that 12-13 timeout range, you kind of, all right, get him in there for a few minutes, get him a breather. So we've always seen that mentality. You play your best players, but do you have to play Girard and Buddy 38, 39 minutes a game? We'll see if Richmond pushes hard enough on that. The other freshman that's been getting some buzz is Frank Anselm. And they're big men. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, the guys you think are going to play, Girard, Buddy, Richmond, certainly Alan Griffin, not an Elijah Hughes clone per se, but fits that wing position, can shoot the three, and you're kind of putting him in that role. He could play both positions, but he's essentially this year's Elijah Hughes. We know Marek's going to play. We know Barama Sidibe is going to play. And let's not forget how good both of those guys were, but particularly how good Barama was at the end of last year. As Alan Griffin said on Bridge Street,
you know, if you look at our returners, especially towards the end of the year, those guys got better. Joe Girard got better. Buddy Boeheim started to do different things. He was better. Barama Sidibe was better. Marat was better. Like, all those guys are better. And, you know, and from that point to where we are right now, they've gotten a lot better. So I think we're way ahead of schedule. And I think the freshmen and incoming guys that we bring in, especially with the transfer of Alan Griffin, will be an addition for us. And, you know, we got a pretty good team, and I think we're pretty happy as a staff with what we have.
That's assistant coach Alan Griffin on Bridge Street today. I believe we have a clip here of Quincy. Seth, is this Quincy Guerrier or is this Griff talking about Quincy Guerrier? Either way, Quincy coming back from injury is big. So this is Griff talking about Quincy. Okay, let's listen.
Doing great. Doing great. Quincy's been great. Yesterday in our workouts, he looked stronger, finished around the basket a little bit better than usual. So he's getting there. It's going to take some time, especially coming from injury, but he's doing a phenomenal job with our training staff and our strength and conditioning coach, Ryan Cabela. So he's coming along.
Look, Quincy has the biggest, I think, how can I phrase this properly? You want to talk about from 1 year to the next, biggest upside, I guess, for lack of a better term. We saw the flashes of it, had to get over the injury, but he could take his place amongst one of the better forwards in the ACC. What you're looking at, and you got some head scratchers about, is the big men. Of the big men, some we mentioned, others we haven't yet, like Robert Braswell, like John Bolajac, Jesse Edwards, of course. Who plays? Who makes a difference? Who's best in the zone? That's still a question mark. Of not only who's going to get in, Syracuse is one of the tallest teams in the country, but that was a weakness inside last year. So where's the improvement there? Where, to use a phrase, who's the flex seal that's going to fix that leak? How about that? That's still a question mark at this point. But if Alan Griffin steps into that role that he's anticipated to, if Guerrier is better, particularly, you know, kind of, Guerrier is one of those guys that you can just see it because he's just got that size, he's got that athleticism, and you see the potential, but we only saw it in spots. When he's consistent there, when he is comfortable, when he is confident, and he just starts playing, as we saw at times last year, but you also saw a guy that was thinking a little bit, that was still trying to get comfortable, but when he just plays, that's an intimidating player. That's somebody that's going to command respect and has a presence in the paint. So that could help that problem. With Marek and Barama, I mean, look, their games are getting better, they're getting smarter. We saw the foul trouble issues dissipate to a manageable level at the end of the year, so that's going to be a big question there. But those are three good big men there, but you don't have like that true big, you don't have, what Quincy can be. But you have a lot of tall players, like Bolajac, like Jesse Edwards. Where does Woody Newton fit into this conversation? It seems like he's kind of the odd man out at this point. We'll just kind of practice and be involved, but how much is he really going to get in there? So all those fun questions to debate really kick into gear today because full-on practice has started up at Syracuse. Let's go to the phones here before we take a break and head down to Tampa. Man, things are popping in Tampa. Lightning won the Stanley Cup. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the talk of the NFL in a lot of ways. The Rays in the American League Championship Series. Marty, things are busy down there, man.
Yeah, people are very excited about everything. Obviously, the Lightning, like you mentioned, and the Rays won one win away from the World Series. So, yeah, this is like, Title Town USA.
That's right.
Now.
Big time, baby. We got to beat those dirty, stinking, rotten, cheating Astros. One more win.
Yeah, and it would be nice to sweep them. I think baseball would like to see that.
Absolutely.
Hey, Brent, I was listening, and that article by Nate Mink was very eye-opening. I read it today, and then you talked about it. You know, with Syracuse's numbers right now, they are technically operating like an FCS school. Doesn't FCS have 60 scholarships? Granted, Syracuse talent level is probably higher, but, you know, is higher. D1 players versus Division I AA. But that's shockingly bad.
It is.
If something it continues, I can see Syracuse saying we're not going to play any more games this year. We got six healthy offensive linemen.
And Marty, I hate to say it, but you mentioned the offensive line. Yep, they're right on the number. And God forbid they have a COVID outbreak, even a small one, they're done. They can't. They might have to cancel a couple of games. Like they're towing that line, and we're losing the connection there, Marty. But we appreciate the call and what could be Title Town USA, as you put it. That's not an exaggeration, folks. Like Marty said it. A few of our other callers have said it. Maybe you're thinking it as you're listening. That is an eye-opening thing, and I'm always fascinated by the dynamic between the media and Syracuse and how certain things get covered and how coaches can do things. Like Dino can't come out and do that. He can't hold up his roster and say, look, my roster's depleted. Even if it is, it sounds like he's making excuses. But to lay it out the way Nate did, here's the numbers, less than 60 scholarship players. Look, an NFL roster is 53 active players. 47 can only participate on a game day. You have to list seven players as inactive. There's 60 players on an NFL roster if you include the practice squad. And I think they expanded the practice squad a little bit this year because of COVID. But typically it's around 60, 62 players. That's where Syracuse is at. Like that, those are their numbers. That's bad. So you have to factor that in when you're talking about this team. That can beat Liberty, but you're going to put that up against Clemson next week? What? They should make Clemson play their second string, and even that's one of the better teams in the country, right? So let's break on that note. Go on the Blind Side. You're on the Block, ESPN Radio.
Thank you. Bye-bye.